This is tape 6, principle 2, shift your focus. In this part, Len describes the second principle, shift your focus. This principle will give you a model for identifying your blocks in any negotiation and what you can do to melt those blocks to move on. Handout number 12 in your booklet outlines the 4 factors that Len will be covering. You can use this form to do the application exercise at the end of this tape.
Now let's talk about the second principle that I call shift your focus. The concept behind this principle is that in any conversation or interaction or negotiation with others, there are always 4 elements. There is, first of all, the topic that we're talking about. Secondly, there is a relationship between myself and the other person. Third, there's the process that we're using. And fourth, there are criteria for settlement. Our tendency is to only stay focused on the topic and to ignore what's going on in our relationship or ignore what's going on in our process and to ignore the fact that we sometimes do not have agreement about criteria for settlement. What's important is to recognize that when I'm having a conversation with someone and it's going well, it's going easy, when I and the other person can talk about the topic and we can come to easy agreement about what the reality is, what all of our data is, what's going on, and we can analyze it and understand what needs to happen and generate solutions and come to agreement about what we need to do. When that's all easy, that's great. That's all we need to do. There's no negotiation. But when that's not the case, when it doesn't work, when I get stuck with the other person, it is almost always because either there is something wrong with our relationship, or our process is not effective, or we do not have agreement about our criteria for settlement. Hence, what this principle is saying is that it is essential in our negotiations with others that we be willing to shift our focus, that we be willing to not just stay narrowly focused on what the topic is, but that we're also willing and able to observe what's going on in our relationships, in our process, and in our criteria for settlement, so that when blocks occur in any or all of these areas, that we're able to shift the focus of our conversation to directly address those issues that need to be addressed so we can melt the blocks and move on. So let's talk about each of those factors. The topic is quite obvious, I think. The topic is whatever the external subject is that we're talking about. So again, it could be the price for something, or it could be somebody's performance. It could be the schedule. It could whatever the subject is that we're talking about, the external topic. But in the course of talking about that, you and I have some relationship. We always have some relationship, even if it's somebody that we're just encountering for the first time, or that we're encountering just briefly, such as someone who may be servicing us in a store, or an airline personnel who is making our reservation. Even if it's a brief encounter, we still have some relationship with that person. Relationships need to meet certain criteria. Relationships need to be safe, and they need to be respectful, and they need to be resolved. When my relationship with another person is not safe, then I avoid them. I avoid doing what I need to do with them. And when my relationship with another person is not respectful, I work around them. Respect, I think, has to do with the degree to which we trust another person to be competent, whether we trust that other people are going to do what they say they'll do, the degree to which we can trust that somebody is able to do what we need done. Can we count on them to be there when they say they're going to be there? So it has to do with trust and competence. And if I don't respect you, then I end up finding some way to work around you to get it from somebody else or to do it for myself. So respect is an essential component in our relationships with others. And the third component, the third criteria, is that our relationships need to be resolved. If I have some grievance that I'm carrying around in relation to you from the past, if I feel like I've been harmed by you or treated unfairly by you or taken advantage of by you, if I'm angry with you for something or don't trust you, then I will tend to work against you. I'll tend to try to pay you back to even the score. Hence, these criteria need to be met if we're going to work easily and successfully with another person to address issues and reach agreement. When there is something wrong with our relationship, when there is a lack of safety or respect or resolve, when there's some conflict, then it either makes it more difficult or oftentimes it makes it impossible for us to do what we need to do with others. Our tendency is to ignore that or to avoid it. It's uncomfortable oftentimes to directly address our relationship issues with others. We hope that they'll just go away, that time will take care of it, or that they'll somehow right themselves magically. But that rarely happens. Time does not heal relationships. Only people heal relationships. And what is oftentimes true is that the topic that we start off talking about isn't the only issue, and it's not even the real issue. It's simply a symptom. Sometimes the real issue, the most important issue, is our relationship with another person. If I don't have a good relationship with another person, then what happens is that either we don't get our immediate problem solved, or I find that I have a repeating pattern of problems with the same person, or the same problem keeps coming back. That's one of the ways that I know that there's something going on in the relationship. It's helpful in thinking about relationships to make a distinction between problems on one hand and conflicts on another. Problems have to do with the external topic that we're talking about, that external quantitative issue. And for problems, it is oftentimes necessary and appropriate that we compromise because problems have to do with external quantitative limited resources. There's only so much time, so much money in the budget, so much equipment, and we have to decide how we're going to prioritize and allocate those. But when we're talking about relationship issues, when we're talking about safety and respect and resolution between people, compromise really doesn't work. What we need is not compromise, but understanding and acceptance. The only thing that resolves relationships is understanding and acceptance. Again, it goes back to our core concept that we talked about in the very first tape, and that is the importance of understanding instead of being right. When we're in a posture of being right, we've always got some problem going on in our relationships. And when I'm in a posture of trying to understand, we have our relationships moving in the right direction. So it's very important that we be willing to be honest with ourselves, to look at what's going on in our relationships with others, and to be willing to address those issues directly when what's going on in our relationship is blocking us from getting done what we need to get done. And it may be that we need to address a pattern that's been going on in a relationship, or what is commonly true is that in the course of a conversation with someone, I'll suddenly notice that they've gotten irritated, or they've become defensive, or they seem non-cooperative, or they've gotten silent. And so I need to stop and check out what's going on in our relationship in the moment. I may need to say to the person, it feels like suddenly we're not on the same side of the table. You seem to be irritated. What happened? You know, what are you feeling? That I'm willing to address in the moment and remove, resolve, whatever that block in the relationship is. Some years ago, I was called into a university to solve a workflow problem between their business department and their continuing ed department. And it didn't take but about 20 minutes to realize that the problem here was not an operating system problem. The problem here was the fact that the head of the business department and the head of the continuing ed department used to be young instructors together, and they had had conflict 25 years ago, and it had never been resolved, and they were still paying each other back. I think that in my experience over the past 20-some years of working in organizations, that probably one of the most significant causes of loss one of the most significant causes of non-productivity and poor quality in organizations is the issue of relationships. It's the issue of conflict. That by and large, people have the skills to do what they need to do. And oftentimes why they're not doing it is because there is something going on in their relationships with others. I think this issue of relationships and conflict is a major issue in every organization. And it's something that clearly needs to be addressed. Without relationships that are safe and respectful and resolved, then we do not have commitment. People are not committed to each other's success. They're not committed to doing what they need to do when they need to do it. They're not committed to initiating and doing what they need to do on their own. They're not committed to really staying with issues and working through them until there's real resolution between themselves and others. Relationships are a critical factor, and they need to be addressed when they're in the way of doing what we need to do. It's important to, if you're in a company and an organization, to stop and think about what the norms are in your organization for how people are to relate to each other. What characterizes relationships in your organization? And what are the norms about expressing anger or addressing conflict? Is that what people are expected to do? Or are people expected to walk around it or to ignore it or to hope it just goes away? Ignoring it doesn't work. We either resolve it or we don't resolve it. The third factor that is always a part of our negotiations is our process. Process refers to how we go about negotiating whatever it is we need to negotiate with others. Are we going to meet in your office or are we going to meet in my office? Are we going to meet alone or is there going to be a third party there? Are we going to yell and scream at each other or are we going to talk quietly? Are we going to plan our defenses while each other's talking or are we going to actively listen to each other? Are we going to do traditional union management contract bargaining or are we going to try to find some collaborative ways to really identify the needs of the organization and the people in the organization and to find ways to meet those needs that meet all of our needs? What's the process we're going to use? Process, like relationships, need to meet certain criteria. Our process needs to be safe as well, because if it's not safe, then we don't participate. We see this as part of negotiations oftentimes, for example, in international negotiations, where much of the negotiation has to do with meeting individually with the various parties to determine by what criteria they're even willing to sit down with each other. And that's something that I oftentimes need to do in organizations, that when there's some conflict between parties or between groups, departments, that I will go and interview the various parties to find out what their concerns are and what they need to be willing to sit down. And sometimes it requires that I do individual work with people for a period of time before they're ready to sit down together so that they'll do something more constructive than simply blaming each other. So our processes need to be safe. Our people don't participate. Our processes also need to be fair, because if they are not fair, then people become defensive, they become non-productive in the process, and they don't agree with the results. If I don't feel that I've had fair voice, if I don't feel like I've had my day in court that I've been listened to, if I don't feel like I've had reasonable authority, appropriate authority to make decisions about what's going to go on, then I'm probably not going to support it. Our processes need to be fair. And thirdly, our process needs to be effective. It needs to be a process that leads us towards resolution. Yelling at each other is not an effective process. Planning our defense while others are talking is not an effective process. To have staff meetings where there's no agenda or where nobody takes minutes and people don't have agreement about what was decided on, or meetings where we just keep talking about it but we never get to conclusion, or some people never get a chance to say anything, those aren't effective processes. Or traditional union management negotiation is not an effective process. A process in which the union waits until 6 weeks before contract time and then sends a letter to management that management laughs at and scoffs about, and then to have management send a letter to the union that they laugh at and scoff about, and then to go sit down in a motel at a table across from each other and tell war stories for several days. That's not an effective process. That doesn't solve problems. It doesn't build relationships. It doesn't create commitment. It doesn't create a future. By and large, what it often does is simply create more damage. That's very different than a process in which people sit down on a regular basis and analyze what's going on and how they need to collaborate to understand and solve the problems that face them together in a way that's good for both parties. A process in which actual union contract time is not a big deal because they have mutual respect and trust because they've been working together in collaborative ways day to day. They don't use the contract as a symbolic time to pay each other back for the offenses that's happened during the past contract period. So it's important that we look at our process, that we look at ways that make it safe for others, that are fair to others, and enable others to effectively get done what they need to get done with us. The fourth factor, the fourth element in any negotiation, is our criteria for settlement. Criteria for settlement really refers to two different things. On one hand, it refers to the needs of the parties involved, either their individual personal needs, as we talked about five needs in one of our earlier tapes, or to the organizational needs that they represent. If I can't come up with some solution with you that's going to enable you to go away getting what you need as well, then we're not going to have a commitment. We're not going to have agreement. We're not going to have resolution. Clearly, whatever we need to do needs to meet the individual and organizational needs of all the parties involved. So that's clearly one of the criteria that needs to be a part of all of our negotiations, is that we're paying attention to, trying to understand, trying to identify, trying to name what the needs are of the parties involved. That is what negotiation is. That is what we're about in the process of negotiating. The other thing that criteria refers to are what I would call criteria, fair external standards, or fair standards for settlement. That in many of the topics that we talk about with others, there are certain pre-established or external standards that you and I need to agree to, or we'll find ourselves crosswise with each other and not in agreement at the end. So, for example, if I'm talking to an employee about their performance, then their job description or their written list of accountabilities would be an external standard that I and the employee would need to agree to, that they're clear and we agree to as being valid. Otherwise, we're probably never going to come to agreement about what that employee's performance is supposed to be and whether or not his performance is acceptable. Other external standards that may apply might be price lists or past contracts or contracts that are in existence, past practice, tradition, the law, corporate policies or procedures, ethical standards that have been set, accepted research protocols, healthcare protocols, how to go about doing something, such as a surgical procedure. All those might be external standards that would apply and that to which we would need to have agreement. Or we'll end up in conflict, we'll end up stuck with another person. For example, one of my sons some years ago wrecked his car, and he called me and said he had done so. And I said, well, what's the problem? And he said, well, the insurance company immediately sent out an adjuster and they appraised my car. And I said, and? He said, well, they wrote me a check for only $1,500. And I said, and you think your car is worth more than that? He says, yes, I think my car is worth over $3,000. And I said, so the process that they used, shifting our focus, the process that the insurance company used was to send their appraiser out, and the criteria that they are wanting you to accept is his appraisal. And the rest of the process is they want you to cash that check, and that means you agree with their criteria. So what you need to do in this instance is change your process and change the criteria. So how else might you value your car? He said, well, it's too old. It's not in Blue Books, but it is advertised for sale in some magazines. I said, so that would be another source of value, of criteria. He said, there are also a couple of garages in town that work on cars like mine, and they could appraise it. I said, so that gives you another source of criteria. So why don't you see if you can find some magazine ads, see if it's advertised in the newspaper, and why don't you go and get your own appraisal done at one or more of these garages? That creates other external standards of criteria for settlement. And the process you need to use is to not cash the check they gave you, but to call the insurance company back, tell them that you're changing the process and criteria, and renegotiate the amount with them. Well, Andy did that, and he got $3,400 for his car. So frequently it's necessary that we focus on criterion process if we want to have a satisfactory outcome to our negotiation with others. Another example where that has come up for me recently is in a conflict within a management team where they were not in agreement about what needed to be done in the project. And they got into blaming each other and accusing each other's departments. And the fact is that they had not established clear criteria for measuring what quality meant in terms of this project. And they did not have clear operating procedures, both for the engineering or the manufacturing parts of the process. When they recognized that, they changed their process of blaming each other to sitting down together to design the operating systems they needed to define what those quality criteria were, and the problem went away. They were able to produce the product they needed to produce in the way they needed to do it to meet their customer requirements. A third example of this that I've encountered was with a federal agency that's responsible for power, and the policies and the practices that they engage in has an impact on environmental issues, principally on fish and wildlife. And they've been in some conflict with other state and federal agencies and other special interest groups over the environmental impact of what they do in their power supply system. Well, in order to resolve this issue, those various groups need to come to some agreement about how to measure the impact. They need to have some agreement about fair standards of what is acceptable environmental conditions, how do you measure that, who do they agree to as being valid sources to do that, because until they can agree upon those criteria, then their process is going to continue to be one where they sit down and point the finger at each other or continue to sue each other in court, which in this case is a very expensive and not a very effective process. And they're going to continue to be distrustful of each other. So if we look at this principle altogether, this principle of shift your focus, what it's saying is that when it's not working between myself and others, when we're not able to come to agreement, what is almost always the case is there's something wrong with our relationship, or our process is ineffective, or we don't have agreement about criteria. The principle is that I need to get off the topic, and I need to be willing to address what's going on in our relationship, in our process. I need to get agreement about our criteria for settlement. I need to address where the blocks are and to remove those blocks before we go back to trying to deal with our topic. Again, this is true of any negotiations, and it's particularly true sometimes in dealing with scorekeepers, which is why we're talking about this after talking about scorekeeper thinking. Because anytime I'm dealing in a scorekeeper relationship or dealing with someone who is operating out of scorekeeper thinking, there is always going to be something wrong with the relationship. There's always going to be distrust and resentment. There's always going to be a need to shift our focus and try to clean up what's going on in the relationship. And what's true if I'm dealing with scorekeepers is that oftentimes they will try to change the criteria midstream, like, well, now a full house isn't worth as much as a pair. That rule doesn't hold anymore. Or they try to change the process. They'll stall or do something that shifts it to their advantage. So it's important that I get nailed down up ahead, up in advance, up front, what the process is going to be so that we all know what the rules are and so that they feel safer, because the safer I can help them feel, the more likely they will expand their thinking and work with me in more collaborative, productive ways. So if I want to know how to get unstuck, this is one of the ways to not get stuck with others. It's to recognize when there's blocks in one of these three areas and to be willing to directly address those before we try to talk about the topic. Again, there is an application exercise to help you apply this principle, and I strongly encourage you to do this application exercise. It's one thing to think about shifting our focus. It's something else to really put it into practice. So I invite you to look at worksheet number 12, where you will find the outline of each of these four elements, the topic, relationship, process, and criteria, and invite you to think about some real examples that you have where you have gotten stuck with others or where you're not getting the results you want. You may want to use some of the examples you've used for some of the earlier exercises, or you may want to use some new examples. And in each of those, identify what the topic is, and then under relationship, assess, you know, make some notes to yourself about whether the relationship is safe, respectful, and resolved, and what's data that tells you that it is or isn't, and describe what your process is. I mean, literally, step by step, what are you doing? And once you've described what those steps are, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, you know, what have you done? What have you said? What's gone on back and forth? And then analyze that. Is the process that you've used, is it safe for both parties? Where both parties say it's fair, and has it been effective? Or what else do you obviously need to be doing? And what are the criteria that apply? What do you need? What does the other party need? What are the organizational needs that you represent? And are there some external standards that apply? Are there job descriptions or policies or laws or price lists or contract terms? Are there criteria that you need to identify and clarify between you if you're going to have agreement? Sometimes what that criteria refers to is the level of decision-making authority between you and another person or between groups of people. Who has veto authority, or who just has influence authority, or who just needs to be informed? The issue of decision-making authority is frequently a criteria source, an external standard that blocks us from reaching agreement with others. So I invite you to do this exercise and to use this principle as a model for identifying when you get stuck with others, where the block is, and what you need to do in what sequence to get unstuck with the other person.
This is the end of tape 6.